Jen.
Sarah.
Jen, I'm so happy.
I'm not. I was driving home today. I was driving home today with Little Romance, and I was listening to iHeartRadio, as one does when you're with a teenager in the car. And
should I know what that is?
You'll know when your child gets older. Okay.
You guys, I'm so uncool. I don't know what that is.
It's okay. This is a dark time for you when your kids are little. So they're saying that they have podcast awards. And I was like, but no one has notified me.
I'm off awards, Jen. You win the podcasting award of my heart. And also, okay. I think probably a lot of people who listen would say, like, this is a great podcast. We really enjoy it.
So if you work for iHeartRadio, hello, tell them that, you know, people can listen to the radio and read books. Hello. Those are not mutually exclusive.
I mean, I think we could probably be in the running for, like, most fun book podcast.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many other fun book podcasts are there? There's, like, Let's Read Ulysses.
I mean, Literary Disco does have a great name.
But truthfully, we would submit the pegging episode. Sure. Because that's clearly, you guys, all right, can we talk about the fact that all of our listeners are pervs in a delightful, wonderful way? No kink shaming, you guys. But our pegging episode, like, you guys listened to it. Also, welcome new listeners. We don't understand where you came from.
They've been waiting for us to deliver the content.
I know you have been. Hang on. I'm coming in real hot. Coming in real hot, you guys. Hang on. And I have this new setup, so everything's upside down.
You're like, oh my God, if you could see Sarah right now, she's literally like teabagging her microphone.
Oh my God. So can I tell you, so today,
should we introduce ourselves, Sarah?
Oh shit. Yes. You go. Welcome.
Welcome to Faded Mates, everyone. I'm Jen Reads Romance. I'm obsessed with awards, apparently. And this is my friend who is better than me.
I'm Sarah McLean. And it's not that I'm better than you. It's just that I've won an award. And then the whole award fell down the toilet. So I'm off awards.
It's true. I don't think I've ever won an award.
You win the award for my faded mate.
Oh, that's nice.
Today, this week I texted Jen and I was like, you realize we're like work wives, right? Like we
I know.
Basically we in a legal situation, Jen and I are like protected by spousal.
Courtney Milan's like freaking me out and I'm like looking into D&O insurance. I don't know what it is, but I think we need it.
We definitely need it. Last week we were so proud of ourselves because we started the podcast with welcome everybody to Faded Mates. And I was so proud of us. And then Eric pointed out that all we did was say welcome everyone to Faded Mates. And then we just bragged about how great we were and then did not actually introduce ourselves.
Eric is like, do you ever see that commercial where the kid's like, you're harshing my dream mellow? Like, that's Eric. He's harshing my dream mellow all the time. Well,
I feel like he's just constantly, like, he's holding us down to earth. We're like balloons that would float away. And we just think, sometimes we think real highly of ourselves. And it's not really necessary, but sometimes
we do. Oh, yeah. Last week, he was like, I cut out the first 20 minutes. You guys just said the same thing you said the week before. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was real harsh. The text that I got from him was, I'm cutting out the first 20 minutes. You're being kind. You're not telling the truth. The truth is, the text I got from him was, I'm cutting out the first 20 minutes of the podcast. It's boring. And I was like, oh my God. Anyway.
I feel like the pegging episode, I feel like,
is it possible we peaked?
I'm real worried about it. We jumped the shark or the carrot or whatever it would be.
You guys, and so many people came for it. And so he literally sent us a text earlier this week and he was like, you guys got to do an interesting episode because you got all these pegging people and now you're going to lose them all. And I was like, you're making me feel really bad. But that's why we have him here. And I promise you guys, the episodes are better for him. So, you know, thanks.
Oh God,
Eric.
Yes. Oh, I mean.
But no, so the pegging episode was our most popular episode ever by like 800 new listeners or something, like some crazy number. So welcome all of you. We don't always talk about smashing from the back, but that's Ooh. I stole that from Aida.
Yeah, she's our goddess.
My favorite musician. yeah, and if you haven't listened to the pegging episode, that doesn't make any sense to you, but go back and listen to it.
You'll be better for it, trust me.
Yeah. So, but then I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, we went from pegging and we like gained all these listeners and then we went right to Born and Nice and like Nora's great, but it's a real different audience.
Yes, so, sure.
Welcome everyone. It's a big pool and we enjoy having you in it. And this week, we wanted to pick something that we loved, like that we really was going to be a fun read because it is rough out here in romance right now.
Oh, God. I do love this book. It's also real dirty. So,
Scotty!
Oh, Scotty.
This is not a Star Trek Scotty.
No.
Mm-mm. Although there are jokes about Star Trek in this book.
There are. It's amazing. This whole book's so perfect. I mean.
Oh, Kristen Callahan. What the fuck? Why is she so good? God, it makes me really mad.
I know. I'm sure. I feel like this is the best part of the podcast where I'm
Kristen,
like,
Kristen, I love you.
I was like, boy, it must suck to be an author. We talk about all these amazing, perfect books.
Yeah, fuck off.
We're going to be talking about Managed and Fall and maybe Idle while we're at it. The three books in the VIP series by Kristen Callahan. Managed is my favorite. Fall is Sarah's. Nobody's perfect. But before we do start, despite all the giggling at the top, content warning, this book will have discussion of suicide and depression. And so we don't usually content warning episodes, but those are big ones. So we just wanted to put that out there in case you need to hear that before we get started. So,
Scotty. Okay. So, can I tell you my Kristen Callahan story?
Please do.
So, Kristen Callahan came into my life weirdly, not via any of her contemporaries. Although now, I feel like everybody talks about Kristen's contemporaries. She came into my life via her steampunk series, which I feel like nobody knows is amazing. And I really, truly, like, I love these books so much. So I don't know how many books it is. It's like four or five books in the series. And my favorite of them is Evernight.
It's called the Darkest London series. Is that it?
Yes. Yes, that's the correct one. But I just want to make sure because I'm going to talk about Evernight, which I read. So I was reviewing for The Washington Post. I had just gotten the column for The Washington Post, which now actually doesn't exist anymore, although I do still write for The Post periodically. But I was writing a monthly column for The Washington Post where they asked me it was like the dream job, right? Because mm-hmm. they asked me to every month pick three romance novels that I really loved and just write about why I loved them. And they wanted new releases. So that's actually how I started really reading every day mm-hmm. because I knew that I would have to really like talk about the breadth and depth and scope of the genre. I was going to have to be reading like way more books than I was already reading. And I was already reading like 10 or 12 books a month. So I don't know.
More anyway, books.
So and then I started to really notice the dark spaces in my reading, like the places where I hadn't turned the lights on yet. Like I mm-hmm. rarely read paranormal. I rarely read romantic suspense. And so like I started really having to like think carefully about how to tackle the whole wide world of romance. And somebody whispered in my ear about Kristen's books. And I was like, oh, the Darkest London series. It's steampunk. Steampunk's kind of weird. Like maybe I'll read this and see. And mm-hmm. I sort of turned my nose up at it. I was like, I don't know. This seems like it's going to be real weird. And I read Evernight and man, did I love this book. Because as we all know, one of my favorite kinks is he is poison to everyone but her.
True.
And this isn't quite that, but it's pretty close in like a twisted way. Because the hero, Will, he has a clockwork heart. And he's been sort of built. He's been built. He's a like kind of humanoid type. It's steampunk. So, you know, go with it. But he has a clockwork heart that is slowly killing him, right? Like, because the steel.
Like Iron Man.
Yeah, Exactly. The steel in his heart is like spreading through his body and essentially killing him from the inside. And the only person who can help him is this woman, Holly Evernight, who is able to manipulate steel, like manipulate metal. And so she literally can lay hands on him and push the metal back into his heart. The problem with this, ordinarily, this would be fine. Like, we just see Holly once a day and it's fine. Problem with this is Holly is one of the people who installed the heart to begin with.
Ooh.
So conflict, conflict, conflict. And I gobbled it all up and I was like, who the fuck is Kristen Callahan? And then I bought all the books I could find. And
interesting.
So I've been a Kristen Callahan fan from that moment. That book was published in 2014. And I cannot believe it is 6 years since then.
The turn of the century, Sarah.
Oh my God.
For me, my Kristen Callahan origin story.
Yeah, because this is your book.
Yeah, this is not my Kristen Callahan origin story, though. It is the Who Did It Better in the Library post. Oh. And I was hunting for books that had people doing it in the library, because that's how I am. And what happened was I picked up the book, The Hookup. And I will be really honest with you, everyone. I don't think I read the whole thing. I was basically just reading for the library scenes.
Searching for library sex.
Library plus thrust.
There is only one circulation desk.
That's right. And
I'm going to make that joke every time we talk about libraries.
So I just went back and looked. I awarded it the bronze medal in that post. And then, and now I can't really remember exactly. I remember someone on Twitter recommended Manage to me. And I think what it was is I said, my favorite thing is stern, aloof character without feelings. Meet someone who makes him go, oh, shit. And someone was like, I've got the book for you. It's Managed by Kristen Callahan. And I read it and immediately was like, top 10 book forever. And what's ironic about it is this book, there's a lot of, you know, we talk about how the exception always proves the rule. There's several things in this book, which if you described them to me, other than this, like really like the main thing, should not work for me at any level. And the two biggest are, it's in present tense, which I hate. And by the way, it is hard for me in this book. Whatever. I mean, we don't have to talk about it, but it's not something like that every couple pages I'll stop and be like, okay, fine. But also the this person cures my insomnia is as a person with real insomnia. I know you do, but it's right. Like,
it's so my kink. My kink. But I'm a person who literally, I lay down, my head hits the pillow, and I'm like a robot. I just like power down and am asleep. So no, I get it.
I had to go to sleep therapy. I had a sleep therapist.
I don't mean to make light of your insomnia.
No, it's fine.
I do love it. Because it's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor.
Okay, but in real life, if you have trouble co-sleeping,
then this is terrible.
It doesn't mean that you aren't profoundly in love. Just know that. Okay. Just know that.
Yes.
Oh, this book is so fucking good. All right, so I guess I should summarize. Should I summarize? And then do you want to talk about fall? Because we're going to kind of talk about them together.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about, because I think we should talk. So let's talk about it. So broadly, we've talked about this series before and we talked about this book before slightly. So let's talk about the past. We've at least 800 new listeners. Hi.
Hi.
So let's talk about what we did last year, why we've talked about it, why we're doing it again.
Yeah. So when we first started doing interstitials, like right in our season one, we were reading a series called The Immortals After Dark by Cressley Cole. But we wanted to give people like a week off in between books. Like reading one book a week is a lot. And our producer, Eric, was like, you guys should do these little mini 10-minute episodes in between. And our very first one or two, maybe. I think Escorts was first and then Rock Stars. And they were actually pretty short. Like, it was really just going to be like, we're going to talk about a couple books. And then, of course, it turned into just being a full episode where we really dug into, like, a trope or a theme. So we did talk about fall on the Rockstar episode really briefly, but...
Oh, was it fall? I thought it was managed.
No.
Go on.
We didn't. Because right.
So I already did anything.
Not really, though, because we talked about it only a really little bit.
Because it was, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, and I think it was really framed in the nature of, like, one of the great things about Rockstar romances are found families. Mm. But I think one of the – but that leaves so much on the table that we could still talk about with this series and with these books. Now, the
– well, I think we should also – we're also obviously going to talk about found family because that's part of it. But sure. Yes.
So the first book is called Idol. I actually only read it for the first time. I started with Managed and sort of, and then went to Fall and never went back. And then Managed is the second book and Fall is the third. And
I did the same thing, by the way. I read Managed because you told me to.
Yeah.
And then I read Fall when it came out. And then I went back and read Idol. And Idol just isn't, it's just not my kink. Like, it's fine. Look, Kristen Callahan can write.
Sure. I actually, man. I'm going to tell you what she perfects in Managed that then made me clear why Fall, like Idol didn't quite work for me. But anyway, in Idol, what has happened at the beginning of Idol is that we get the lead singer of like the world's most popular band, a rock band named Killjon, and his best friend, who is like the other lead singer of this band, tried to commit suicide. And the whole band essentially is reeling from this, but now they're going to get back together. So book one is like one of the lead singers kind of falls in love and goes back to the band. Book two, which is Managed, tells the story of their manager, Gabriel Scott, and everybody calls him Scotty.
Scotty!
I like... seriously, look back, like did a Twitter search of just like Scotty from me. And it's at least like 15 times where I just say his name and have like a swooning gif.
Also, because I'm sure you also have like 62 of them with extra E's.
Oh, of course, I can't find them all. Exactly. That's so true. And then the third book, Fall, is Jax, the guy who tried to commit suicide that sort of sent the pinballs kind of right off. And then I think what I've heard is a fourth one's coming, and I just want Kristen to know I'm always available to receive arcs from her. Always.
same, Kristen. Kristen knows. Like, you know, when we started this, not long ago, we did an episode where I just began with, like, I want a new Kristen Callahan book. And, like, here's the thing. You guys, we've talked about reading slumps before. Jen and I have both been in pretty big reading slumps this year. Although I just read a book by Holly Trent that, like, moved me in the direction of
she's
not
great.
Being a reading slump anymore. We'll put that in show notes. It's the one about the book, the boat builder, which is gone from my head now. But anyway, we'll talk about – maybe we could do a boat builder podcast. I'm on a boat and it's going fast and romance is about boat builders. Anyway, so, but.
And pirates, you know, Peg.
Reading Trumps.
Ooh. Whoa. Girl, get away.
You know, here's the thing. It's Donald Trump. Let's just lay it out there. He's ruining romance for me right now.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. Like, my head is just not in it.
Yeah.
Like, yesterday, I texted Jen and I was like, I'm just, like, I'm so delighted because this week I have reread Kristen's books, and I've reread The Player and Rune.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just over here doing that. But
sure.
My point is, Kristen's books are so good, and she nails it every time. And I know, and I don't think she would, I don't know Kristen at all. We're Twitter friends in the way that people are friends on Twitter.
Sure.
But we've never met and, you know, it's not like we text or anything, but I really feel like I can tell from her release dates that she's a slow writer like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of what, you know, the slog is for her, I think, is a similar slog to me, is this idea that, like, you want – you just dwell on every sentence. You want every sentence to be, like, the right sentence, and then it moves forward. And she just – and sometimes that feels really plotting and hard on the reader, and sometimes it just makes for a really delicious book that does – as Jen would say, like, hunts for big game, but is also sexy and funny and clever and modern and all the things that we're looking for. And these books just hit that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think so managed, you know, it's really funny. I reread parts of a lot, and I reread from the beginning, and they, Sophie and Scotty, right, Sophie and Gabriel, meet on a plane, and he is a nervous flyer. But, of course, they're in, like, super fancy first class, the kind where they, like, make you a room, right, inside the plane after you fall – when you fall asleep.
And he's bought two seats because he doesn't like to show that he is a nervous flyer. He doesn't like people to see.
And they and she ends up figuring out just how scared he is, and they sort of cuddle, and there's this great scene, and I don't think I'd caught this before because it's been so long since I've reread the beginning before Lord of Scoundrels, where she unbuttons a button in his shirt, and she, like, kind of is, like, petting his belly, and I thought, God damn, this woman is calling upon the greatest tropes in romance and giving them to our heroine.
Yeah, it's interesting because also I know from Twitter that Kristen is a big romance reader, like, and has been for a long time. And even if I didn't know that from Twitter, I would have probably told you that she – I could have told you that she was. Like, she just – she seems to know – you know, we talk all the time. We talk about the promise of the premise, and we talk about the tropes, and we talk about what the reader experience should be when they're reading a romance novel. And sometimes there are some books that just hit that experience perfectly. And Kristen is one of those writers. And the only way you get to be that kind of writer – is by studying,
reading a lot of, So Scotty, and it's really hard. It's funny because everyone calls him Scotty except Sophie. She calls him Gabriel. And I'm like, it's really funny how I'm like, well, he's Scotty to all the rest of us. So anyway, Scotty and Sophie, you know, he is inexplicably drawn to her, but because of, you know, his feelings of abandonment and being a man and not being able to, like, be in touch with his feelings at all, he is really, like, reticent. I mean, he's very distant and sort of cold and businesslike with her, except that he's realized that, like, one of the only times he's been able to sleep was with her on this plane. So he invites her over one night. He can't sleep. He knows that she's jet lagged. He's sure she's awake too. And she comes over to his house in the middle of the night. And of course it rains on the way over. They got all wet. So they have to, like, shower and change clothes. And there she's in his bedroom, and she's like, God, that bed looks so comfortable. And she lays down and they sleep together. And he falls asleep with her too. Like, he literally can't resist. It's like, oh, gravity.
It's so good.
And so then he goes through a couple, you know, more, you know, so she is what, and this is a kind of another really interesting setup. He is the manager of the band, and she's going to come on board as their new, like, photographer, like, sort of social media expert. She's going to document the tour.
Yes, but tell everybody what her relationship is with
him. But it turns out that she was a paparazzi. And she, the night that Jax tried to commit suicide, she was the one who took photographs of him. And it turns out to be that he had sort of asked her to come up, and she thought maybe they were going to hook up. It wasn't clear. And then it's only in that moment, like a year later, right, when this all happens at the beginning of this book, does she realize that he just wanted to make sure, like, maybe someone was going to find him that wasn't one of his brothers, essentially. And it's this whole, the beginning of the book is just this emotional wrecking ball for everyone, for Sophie, for Jax, for the whole band, for Scotty. And I think one of the things we talk about a lot is how romance is about feelings. Kristen Callahan is an author who understands what that means and knows how to deliver feelings.
Yeah.
And yes. It is a tour de force. And I think, mm-hmm. so then what happens is Scotty says to her, like, you know, they're traveling all over Europe, essentially in buses, right? They go from Lisbon to wherever.
Yeah, this sounds terrible, by the way.
Well, like, it's like $1 million fancy buses. I don't know.
Still, I don't want to like ride on a bus with a bunch of people I work with.
Well, and they stay in fancy hotels when they get
Scotty
there.
Scotty has his own bus.
Yes.
I mean, that's how it has to
be. Sure, of course, of course.
Well, because he can't sleep, so he has his own bus.
So he basically cuts her a deal. He says, if you, like, I just need you to sleep with me. It's not going to be about sex. I can't offer that to you. I'm not good for you. But I'm going to tell you, it is like...
You guys, it's not going to be about sex. It has to be. I mean, also, like, here's the other thing. Remember what I said about Kristen Callahan? Like, clearly having studied the genre, clearly having mm-hmm. read as many romances as we have. Like, she layers the tropes in. Like,
oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, insomnia. Oh, I just need you to sleep with me, but we're never going to have sex. It's not like that. Oh,
of course.
Like sunshine heroine and like the grumpiest fucking hero you've ever met in your life. Sure.
Sure. Let me put it all, found family. Like, let me put it all together.
Oh, and road trip.
And right. All of it. Here's the part that I think I didn't really, I think it only made sense to me after reading Idol, which is a good book. I really like the characters, but there's a really rough transition in Idol from they're sort of together in like North Carolina. He's rented a house. They're on like the Outer Banks or something. And then he has to go back to the tour. And, you know, I don't know, Kristen, I'm sorry. I loved your book, but it's a real baggy middle. And it's kind of a rough transition from like this insulated world of the two of them to the world of the band. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that managed like figures out that book didn't was how to completely have people, the scenery is constantly changing, but the world of Sophie and Scotty is so insular. Mm-hmm. And so like the outside world like never really impacts them. And it's really brilliantly done. And mm-hmm. so even though it would like you'd have maybe a hard time calling this like a Snowden romance or like a close quarters romance, it is.
Oh, of course it is.
It is.
It's a road trip romance too, like right from the jump, like the plane to the bus to the like
they're never still.
What she's done is she's given you this like – so the appeal of the rock star romance – there are lots of appeals of the rock star romance, and we talked about some of them. And one of the things that I don't remember that episode because it was 1,000 years ago.
Oh, so long.
But – and I haven't re-listened to it. But one of the things I wonder if we talked about is this appeal – the celebrity piece of
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
Because one of the big appeals of the rock star romance is the same as the Prince romance or the whatever. It's the like superstar musician – like who could have literally anybody in the mm-hmm. whole world, but chooses normal girl.
Yes.
Superstar actor, superstar prince, superstar whatever. And in this case, but that is a very, and that's the first book in the series. That's Idol. So, and it's a little, and it's Fall too.
Yeah.
But there's, although with Fall, it's a, there's a different layer. But the but in this case, what Kristen has done is sort of stripped away that trope, like, and said, I'm going to give you the found family and the, like, mm-hmm. celebrity aspect. Like, I'm going to give you the feeling of this world, but I'm going to show you how two people who are not celebrities make this happen.
Live in this world.
And there's something so compelling about that because, like, it's just a shift. It's you don't see this story in these books ever.
So it's right. Like we're on the periphery of it. We're being drawn along by it. But we ourselves are not really of it in the same way. And when they are of it, right, there's this one of my favorite scenes in this book is that Sophie gets injured. She's in a crowd that is essentially wild.
Yeah.
And she says that.
Crazed for the.
Yeah.
Like fanatics. They're fanatics.
Yeah. It's like there's an edge of danger in it. And she meets like another like paparazzi, someone she used to know. And he ends up essentially like elbowing her and kind of forcing her back into the fray. And Scotty freaks out because he cannot handle seeing her in danger. And it's this really telling moment like for both of them. And it really is like when they are really thrust into like the spotlight that the band is in all the time, it's like dangerous.
Yeah. It's really particularly interesting because one of the struggles, I mean, I love actually a celebrity romance, but one of the struggles with romances that live in that trope is that as a normal reader watching this, like reading the book, you lose, like, it's all important to the musicians because it's important to the musicians. This is my dream. I've spent my whole life wanting this, like working toward this thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And then it's always the conflict is like, is celebrity really like
worth it? You know, or what is it costing me? Yeah.
But the reality is that in this particular case, what she's done is said, like, this is important because there is a whole world of people who rely on this community to exist and this band to do its job.
Yeah.
And plus, it's dangerous. Like, like there are real risks to this that aren't like, oh, maybe I'll, you know, overdose, or oh, maybe I'll, you know, one day not be famous. The risks are like for normal people who just happen to be satellites to the planets of the
right
musicians. And I just really like it. I really like that Kristen did something. I like that it's so different.
Yeah.
And all of her books feel that way to me. Like, Idol feels like a rock star romance to me, right? But, like, this is – it's Cressley again. The first book in the trilogy feels like, you know, 50 Shades. Like, it feels like she's learning to drive a stick in a Ferrari. And then the second book she gets – like, she figures it out.
Yeah.
Like, she figures out how to change gears and, like, you're off to the races. Because that second – this book is not a rock star romance, and neither is the next one, even though they are.
Well, and I think one of the other things that I think is really brilliant about this book is rock star stories come with – you know, I think maybe it's very American, the idea that – great artistic greatness often comes with self-destruction, right?
And I don't think that's just American, though.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, sometimes I'm wary of, like, making blanket statements. I don't know if it is or not, but it's definitely... Well,
if you think about rock stars that have really, like, ruined their lives, there are certainly a lot of English rock stars that have done the same.
Sure. So I think that that's, like, one of the brilliant, like, really smart moves she makes is that the self-destruct button on the band and Jack's trying to commit suicide happened a year before book one even starts. Mm-hmm. You know, Jack's book, which is book three, it was 2 years ago. And so you really are giving people, you're kind of giving people the impression that, like, those wild and crazy times happened, but they happened in the past. And if you've read a book that, if you're interested in, like, rock star stories, it's, like, Almost Famous, like, that. I love that movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just read a novel called Daisy Jones and the Six, which is fantastic. And it's people, like, but essentially it's, like, the rise and fall of a 70s rock band, but, like, as it's happening. Mm-hmm. And it was harder for me to read. It's, like, right, like, the drugs and the sex and the self-destructive behavior. It's hard for me. I just feel so, like, nervous for people. And so the smart move, the way this, one of the reasons this series really worked for me is I knew that they had been through that, but we get the sense that they've come out on the other side. And now it's like the healing part, like we're there for the healing part.
Yeah. And you know what Kristen does so well in this book and then again in Fall is sort of tackling the betrayal that everybody kind of feels.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Scotty from the jump kind of can see the forest for the trees, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's personal for him because these are his people and these are his friends and these are his brothers, but like he can see how harmed everybody is in the whole scenario, which is part of why his relationship with Sophie is so powerful, because like she was a big part of the harming.
Or she was a witness to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And on top of it, but like as a paparazzi, like as somebody who is in the paparazzi, like she comes at it from a very different perspective too. And like her, it's a challenge. Like, again, the sort of layering of character here, character becomes conflict over and over in this book.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, and one more thing is just that like, it's also like unspoken throughout the entire book that the reason they need someone like Sophie on staff is because of the way everyone is watching to see if Jax is really okay.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't a job they needed before. But no one ever says that. We just know. Right?
Yeah. And it's really beautifully done.
Oh, God.
And also bananas sexy.
Well, here's the other thing. So here are the like three things that shouldn't work for me. Like, I can only sleep with you, like present tense, which. Bleh. And then like the slowest of fucking burns. Right.
No, but it's
so good,
it's
though.
It's so slow, but it's not slow.
It's not slow.
They're on fire from the start.
Yes.
They just don't do it for a while. But exactly. They sure like.
Yeah. Well, this is where I'm like, if you think you want to write a slow burn, read this book.
Yeah, this because is a good one.
One of the reasons I hate the slow burn is I think it's really hard to make it happen without me being bored.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about this one is that the slow burn comes, it doesn't, like, I always have to be reminded that they don't do it until, like, pretty late in the book.
They don't even kiss till like 70%. Ask me how I know. Yeah.
But this is the thing is like you say that and I just reread this book like this week and you're like 70%. I'm like, that can't be true. Like it just feels so because it's so intimate.
Well,
it's so intimate.
Yes. And I think that's the mistake. Like, right. If like the mistake I think people make is I want this to be a slow burn. So I'm going to move this character off page.
Yeah, I'm going to keep them apart. And you can't do that.
No.
Readers and this, don't want it.
This slow
Stop
burn
it. If your
is
characters
like,
are separate. I'm going to,
yes,
I'm sorry.
No.
A rule. McClane rule.
Pro cop rule.
Like, but you cannot, if your characters, if you are writing a romance novel and the characters, 2, 3, 5, 10, I don't care how many characters there are, if they're going to end up together, right? All of them.
Yes.
In one room.
Yes.
In one bed. And like, you cannot spend more than one chapter away from each other.
Agreed.
Like, and frankly, like, I gotta say, is there a way for you to shorten that chapter? Like, I mean, and I'm telling you this as somebody who has spent a lot of time writing books for romance readers.
Yes.
And romance readers, first of all, half of them skip those chapters, you guys. I'm sorry, but it's true. And you all know it because if you are a diehard romance reader, you too have skipped those chapters.
Sure.
So one, don't waste energy, time, or plot on those chapters because a lot of readers aren't reading them. And two, like readers want the two characters or three characters or however many characters fall in love to be on the page falling in love.
Yes.
That is the whole banana.
That's the ball game. And I think that's the part where I feel like, and I don't think on the podcast have talked about my real
McClane
like,
rule over.
I was like, the pro cop amendment is, here's what it is. I've been, you know, I went through a big struggle with like these, a lot of books coming out that I feel like really are like, and I hate this phrase, like, I'm going to say mainstream fiction. Like, not women's fiction. But, you know, part of me is like, and I feel like the pattern I kept seeing is we get one of the characters, usually the heroine, if we're going to call it women's fiction, right? On page, really without the romantic partner. And these are almost always like male-female romances and cishet. Like, this sort of pattern I'm describing, I'm not really seeing in queer romance. But it's like we get them on page with like another problem, a work problem, a whatever problem for like a solid 100 pages before that love interest enters. Or so it's either like the love interest is either gone from the first quarter or the other place they go missing is the third quarter. And I'm like,
yeah. That's, I mean, and all right.
I don't want it.
In as a writer.
I don't want it.
Like, you know this because you are now not just my writer, but also my, like, mainly wife. But you know that, you know, the struggle is real in the first quarter and the third quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the first quarter, it's hard to get it right. Oftentimes writers are writing in the wrong, or they're starting in the wrong place.
Yep.
Like, they've written a bunch of backstory that isn't necessary. I know this because, no word of a lie, you guys, every time I set pen to paper, I sit down, I start a book, I finish the first 100 pages, I hand it to my editor, and she says to me,
start here.
I don't care about the first 50 pages of this book. And it's always because it's backstory. It's, well, they need to know. The reader needs to know, like, where she was on the night of, you know, September 3rd, 16 years ago. So we start there because chronologically, that's important. Like,
yeah.
You know, your brain, like, writing is hard. Revision is everything. It's a drop of water in the desert. And like, the reality is that the beginning is hard,
yeah.
Right? So that's part of it. And then the third quarter is real hard because it's the time between all the conflict at the beginning of the book and the dark moment and the, like, all is lost, like night of all being lost at the end. So you sort of know the climactic bits that are coming, but you're not there yet. And, it, you know, Carolyn Sparks used to describe writing a book as she once described writing a book to me as a football game. Like, she thinks of it as a football game. And the third quarter is when they're falling in love.
Yeah.
And, like, you come back from intermission. It's not intermission.
Sports ball. What is it?
You come back from halftime and, like, you're powered up again, but there's not a whole lot that happens in the third quarter. Like, you know, you're really saving up. Anything can happen in the fourth quarter, but you're saving up that third quarter of work. And it's where they fall in love.
Yeah.
And that can be really slow if you haven't teed up enough conflict, if they're already in love, or, like, there's a lot. It's magic, right?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that in many books, part of that challenge, so I write for a living, right, in the world, and I have talked already at this podcast about being a slow writer. And I think for fast writers or people who are I'm very lucky, right? Like, I don't have to publish 6 books a year. I don't have to publish 2 books a year. And for people who are writing fast because they have to, they're, you know, feeding the beast, they're responding to publisher demands, they're responding to reader demands, I think sometimes, like, that first and third quarter can be flabby and, like, wrong because they don't have the time to think about
it. To, like, tighten it.
And that sucks, P.S., everyone.
Yeah.
Like, that really does. And it's, like, pushing writers to publish faster and faster is harming the genre.
And it's harming those people.
Yeah. And, like, self-care.
I mean,
I don't know how these people do it.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I hate it because I feel like books, great books, are worth waiting for. You know, they just are. And I know that's easy for me to say. But I think the thing about this book and about, like, the art of the slow burn is that sometimes I feel like people and you know what? I know that I'm a very exacting reader, but I love the genre. Slow burn cannot mean that you let the embers go down to such a degree that there's, like, no heat left in them. Mm-hmm. So it's very rare to find, I think, a slow burn book that is hot all the way through, that, like, their longing is supercharged. The intensity of the fact that they are together, this, like, interiority of the world they're creating, the intimacy, you know, along with, you know, sort of the very real fears they both have about, like, sort of past mistakes and not wanting to, you know, to make those again. I think it's pretty much a perfect book. I mean, I think that there's a way in which, you know, we talk about books that blooded us, but, you know, we've also talked about books that we think are really like doing something really well. And I think that that's one thing this book does really well is it's like a slow burn that is not like losing any of the momentum or heat or tension between these two. In fact, it's just like ratcheting it up to like a higher and higher degree. And I think it's really momentous. And then, you know, when they finally do, I mean, and it's not necessarily even that like sex is the payoff, because I don't know that that's necessarily the case, although it kind of is. There's this amazing scene where he like, it's so dirty. He finds her underwear that like in the bathroom and it's not washed. And he like jerks off with it. And I was like,
put it in my veins.
And I was like, holy shit. I mean, and that's it. It's like, this is, you know, I mean, it is
so good.
And that's the thing too. So you're like, I feel like
she's so like into sex too. Like, it's really magnificent. And like, right, even at the very end, like, at the end, they're on a plane again. Mm-hmm. And there's this like very big, like, you know, grand gesture on a plane. And she's like, I can't believe we're on, like, you got on a plane for me. Because he hates planes. And he's like, well, I mean, you're more important than being afraid of flying, right? Like, I just, like, of course I got on a plane for you. And she's like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to, like, give you a big BJ the whole way to wherever we're going. And I'm like, I love it. Like, I love how, and he's so buttoned up and, like, wearing his suit and is like, I mean, I was rereading it and also from the beginning this week. And I love that, like, he's wearing a sweater vest when they meet. Like, he's, I know you do. I know you do. I've met your husband. I know.
And so, Mr. Reed's romance is very handsome in a sweater vest.
And I like, and I just like, he's so tightly wound.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also why when he goes to bare knuckle fight.
Oh, God.
I'm like, yeah, give it to me.
Of course you are.
More. I mean, you guys, I'm basically finishing the third book in the Bare Knuckle Bastard series right now. And I texted Jen the other day and I was like, I don't know, this whole book, I don't know. It's like all fighting and fucking.
And of course I was like, let's do tequila shots and get it done, Sarah.
And the reality is, like, the second that he like turns up to like fucking Tom Hardy fight.
Oh, God.
I'm there. I'm just there. Like, yes.
I mean, Kristen. This is on. Yeah. I mean, this hero, it's like, I mean, and I get this, it's like perfectly crafted to hit every single one of like my like pleasure points as a reader, right?
Because I feel like Kristen should come on the podcast because I feel like we would agree.
Oh, God, yes.
It would be a lot of like, yes, I also love that.
Mm-hmm, right, know, exactly. But that's it too, right? Oh, yeah. Like, and I feel like this is this hero who is so tightly wound that he's afraid of unwinding, right? Yeah. And to the point where he like literally makes himself sick. And I think that's like then the other thing about this book, like there's the whole background is this forward movement, right? We're traveling, we're on planes and buses, and we're going from city to city. And, you know, we're in all these fabulous conveyances. And then when they finally like do it, right? And they have to go away on like a vacation for 2 weeks. And then we get this like sun-drenched, like, it's just the two of them finally, right? And it's, like, again, like, the intimacy and the way they are together and the sense that, you know, they are – and that they really have, like, found each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that she calls him Sunshine, which is fucking hilarious because he's not at all.
He is a rain cloud.
Right? But he like, finds that. He finds that in himself. But then, you know, he calls her chatty girl, which I don't really, it's kind of a funny, but it works. But then at the end, in like the low moment for them is, it's a really also interesting how it's done because they have the kind of fight where you as the reader are just like, just slow down and talk to each other. And here is this woman who has done nothing but like talk the entire time. And she just like stonewalls him.
Well, she's just done.
She's done.
I don't want to do it anymore.
And you didn't just believe me. You didn't just trust me. And then we get like, and it's really fascinating too. We talk a lot about like whose point of view, like who has the most to lose in this moment.
Yes.
And it's really fascinating because it's like this one of those cascading fights that like happens over like several hours almost, or several, like a conversation, and then it switches, right? She's like, I'm going to go pack. And then she comes back out and they fight some more. And you're not quite sure why, who's feeling what and what's going on, because it's this dual first person point of view.
Yeah.
And it's only in like the completeness of the fight, when you see it from both of their sides, that you see that they're both just, it's like the exact wrong series of events has happened to bring out like their worst fears.
And it's also so authentic. Like, and this is where I want to lead into Fall with this, because one of the things that I think Kristen does so beautifully, and I don't think many of us do this very well. I don't think I do this very well. I think she shows you like an authentic argument between two people where at the end of it, as a reader, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to fix this.
Yeah.
And it feels like an argument, like if you've ever been in an argument with a partner, it goes like they don't just – they're not like incendiary and like it's just hot burning flame and then like poof, it's done.
Right.
Like sometimes they drag on. They drag on for hours. They drag on for days. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes they drag on for longer. Like and that sort of long, slow argument over hours that ends in them separating from each other feels so real.
Yeah.
And it hurts more.
Yes.
Right? Like – and that's not like – that's not how I write an argument. Like my hero and her, when they have an argument, like it's fucking bananas. And then they're like separated. Then they're – you know, they're like, fuck off. And everybody's in different places. And it's happened over 10 minutes. And – but I think it takes real skill. You know, she is doing real skillful emotional work.
Yeah.
In this book. And also in Fall, because we're – you know, I want to be cognizant of like we – Fall is not the book for the week, but it is my favorite in the series, and it's my favorite for a lot of reasons. But part of the reason why Fall is so powerful to me is because – so the setup for Fall, for those of you who haven't listened to the Rockstar episode, is Jax is the character who has sort of set this whole series in motion by attempting suicide, and he has – been going to therapy, and he has been
rehab,
really trying.
Right?
Yeah, he's been in rehab. He's been really working on himself and like working to be better for himself and for these people. But he's like consumed by secrets because he's terrified of showing any, like this is his family.
Yeah.
But he is terrified of showing any of these people the truth. The scary thoughts that he has. And like, we all have scary thoughts, and people who have been through depression and suicidal thoughts, like have understand that the like weight of worry from all the people who care about you is worse sometimes than like anything you can put on yourself. Like you just feel like such a burden.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not the – like, you are not a burden. You are never a burden. But worry exists in the world, and we worry about the people we love no matter what situation they're in. And there's something so powerfully authentic about Jax's loneliness.
Yeah.
Like, his sort of commitment to doing better, his commitment to himself, his commitment to the people around him, his commitment to his music, et cetera, to the band. But his, like, immense – the immense loneliness of that burden.
Yeah.
And
because he feels like he already burdened them so much. How could I keep doing this?
Yeah. And so they've, you know, Scotty, because Scotty cannot not manage.
Right.
Has hired this woman to like live in the neighbor's apartment. The neighbor who is.
Right.
The idol.
Sure. Guys. Killian and Liberty is like, she's ostensibly like cat sitting
under the, but Scotty sort of machinated all of this in such a way that like she thinks she's cat sitting and so does everyone else. But like Scotty has a plan, which is like, she's really Jax sitting.
Yeah. She'll be nearby. She'll know if something's wrong. She'll.
Yeah.
And there's, I just reread the scene where he sort of sets it up.
Don't go in there.
Like, don't talk to him. But if there's something you notice, just like, let me know. Right. And at that moment, you're like, oh, he's just like, I want someone on that floor. I just want someone there.
Because he's so, this goes back to Scotty, but like he's so grumpy and he's so, it's his own, I mean, he's such an alpha, right? Like he feels feelings and they just confuse him. And like he has all these feelings for these men that he loves. And like, and then on top of it, what Kristen's really doing is she's layering depression. Like she's,
yeah.
You know, we talk about books that teach us what romance can be and like books that do important work of romance. And like Kristen with Fall, she's saying like people who suffer from depression deserve love.
Yeah.
People who have had suicidal thoughts and who have attempted suicide deserve love. People who have been in rehab deserve love. People who have STIs.
Yeah.
Because the like sort of levity of Fall.
Yeah, right.
And it sounds crazy, but like people, the levity of Fall is that it begins with this like rock star. And like, frankly, as all rock star romances should begin, it begins with a rock star discovering that he has chlamydia. And the doctor is like, you have chlamydia. And he's like, what? And she's like, and everyone is just like, yeah, you're a rock star. Of course, you have chlamydia. And right. Like, here's this guy who's been like, the one thing that he's been doing, the sort of problematic area of his life, is he's just sort of like been sleeping with anybody who's interested in sleeping with him.
Sure.
And so he ends up with chlamydia because, you know, that's a risk that you take. And the doctor is like, you can't have sex with anybody for a while. And yeah. He's like, what? And so he has no choice but, like, to find some sort of human connection with the cat sitter next door.
Right.
Who is a professional friend, which is also, like, a wild premise.
Yeah. And like, it's really interesting because.
Also, like, professional friends.
Romance jobs.
I don't know, though. But, like, you know, it's set in New York City. I live in New York City, as you all know. It feels very authentic to me. Like,
yeah.
I know Kristen does not live in New York City, but it feels, like, very New York to me.
Yeah.
And I had this moment reading it. I remember reading it the first time. And, like, when the reveal comes that she's, like, a professional friend. And she doesn't want to tell him that that's what she does because she doesn't, like. Because it's not his business, first of all. And also, like, she just doesn't. She doesn't want that to be a part of their life. And so, like, but he sees her out, like, on a friend date that she's being paid for. And he's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, are you on a date with this person? And it's just so, and I had this moment where I was like, this feels like a job that in New York could exist. Like, people are lonely. Like, the whole book is about loneliness.
Oh, and, yeah. Like,
it's about how we search for human companionship and how we search for friendship
and
how
family. We
search for love and family. And it's heartbreaking and magical. And it is one of my top romances of all time because of the work it does around just how you exist as a human in the world. Like, we talk about the sexuality spectrum and, you know, ace and arrow and like people who are in the A part of the LGBTQA spectrum. And I think this is a romance novel that really could speak to people who are looking for that kind of feeling too, because it feels so human.
Yeah.
It sort of takes, it's also, I mean, yes, it's also extremely sexy and, like, there is a very deep love story there. But, like, there's something – she's doing something else with that book, too.
I think the thing I remember thinking about, and I had a pretty busy week, so I didn't get to reread the whole thing, was being really struck by for both – is her name Stella?
Yes.
Okay. For both Stella and Jax, one of the things that I found really poignant was that – through doing what they love the most, they also, like, found, like, it made them more lonely. They're like, we talk a big game about, like, just do what you love and you'll find success. But in both of their cases, like, the doing what they love cut them off from the world in a way they didn't expect. Because for Jax, obviously, it's like once he becomes not just a musician, but like a superstar, his ability to just like meet people and hang out or do whatever is basically just gone. It's just compromised. And for her, I just remember thinking like it was so heartbreaking that like she reached out to be like a professional friend to people because it was just like something she was good at. But then she couldn't figure out how to just really be friends with people outside of the boundaries of this like the relation, like these paid relationships mm-hmm. she was having, right? Like it somehow made it harder for her to just have her own friends. And I,
right. And, well, I, and she doesn't, right? she also comes from a family, like
there's a broken family.
There's a really interesting mirroring in the, like Kristen's really created two characters who mirror each other because he feels like he is such a burden to his family. To the rest of the band and the band family. And she is burdened, very burdened by her family in this book.
Yeah.
But like not in a way where like, you know, we're all burdened by our family a little bit, but like we love them and like it's a trade-off. There is no trade-off for Stella. Like she is burdened by her family, but very alone.
Yeah.
And that has made it very difficult for her to love and be loved.
Yeah. And that's it. I feel like, you know, these in managed, it's all about control, right? Like what can you control? What can you not control? Mm-hmm. In this book, it's all about loneliness. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I love romance, but I love romance. I love it all. But committing really powerful to like a theme in this way is not something every book does, and that's okay. But I feel like these ones that do really commit to the idea of exploring fully, like what does it mean to be lonely and what does it mean to feel that your like emotional needs are a burden on the people you love, even though you know they shouldn't be. And what if other people's emotional needs really are a burden to you? I mean, or like, what does it mean to like give up control? Or I mean, all of that. I think it's just really, these are characters that are really doing like emotional, the kind of emotional lifting that like I just think is so brilliant in romance and like what I'm there for.
Yeah. I mean, and also, and I mean, I cannot stress enough, like they're also funny and sexy. And like there's this great scene in Fall where they're in like his favorite guitar like shop in the on the Lower East Side, and like he picks up a guitar and he like plays a song, and like it's that, it gives you, it scratches all the itches if you're a rock star romance fan. Like you've probably read this book one, but if you haven't, this one will scratch every itch. Like and it just, oh, she's so good. And I'm so glad you picked this because I was ready. I wanted to reread something that I knew I would like just be able to like lose myself in.
Yeah. Oh, and that's it. That's how these books really work for me. Although sometimes I do have to rewrite the narration in my head.
Oh my God. Get over it.
I can't. I try so hard.
But it's first person.
It's not first person. It's present tense.
Oh, it's present tense.
First person's fine. I don't have a problem with first person.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Whatever. We all have our burdens, our crosses to bear. I know.
Eric's going
to
be like, I'm deleting this part because it's boring.
Fine. It is boring. Jen has struggles. Time has no meaning. Whatever.
All right.
What are we doing next? I don't even know if we know.
I don't know. You want to do Lorraine Heath?
Sure.
You want to do Waking Up with the Duke?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to have to save Kingdom of Dreams till after your deadline, I think.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you guys. We have to. I know we said Kingdom of Dreams. I know some of you are reading it. I hope you're really loving it. But
we'll get
it
there
is
eventually.
It is an epic, epic book. And I want to read it beginning to end. And I can tell you I will not until this book is turned in.
Sure.
But that's going to happen real soon. So.
Woo.
I mean, knock on wood. Although now just talking about all the, literally, I was sitting here talking about Managed and Fall, and I was like, oh, I got to. So if you are a writer who listens to us and you feel this way every week, know that you are not alone.
Just keep it tight in the third quarter, everybody.
Yeah. Maybe try deleting the first 50 pages of your manuscript. And yeah. Go from there. So, all right. This is Fated Mates. And you can call us.
Yes.
You can call us and tell us about the book that blooded you as a romance reader. We want to hear about them. If you aren't listening to these recordings at the end of the episode, you really are missing out. Like, some of them are really...
They're great.
They're all fabulous, but some of them are, like, really special.
Yeah.
And that telephone number, which you will only hear here in your ear holes, is 646-450-3766. You can leave us a message. You can buy Fated Mates pins and... pegging pins.
Oh, and Kelly is like test driving some new ones for me from some of our old episodes, and amazing. They are really fantastic. So amazing. And stickers.
Woo. Oh, Fated Mates t-shirts are coming. Jen's so excited. They're not here yet, but they are coming, and they will be available through the Jordan Denae shop. But right now you can buy the first two shirts from that collection, but there will be a specific Fated Mates t-shirt. Fated Mates is produced by Eric Mortensen. Find us on Twitter at Fated Mates or on Instagram at Fated Mates Pod. Don't forget that we're having a reading challenge. The January reading challenge is read a book that blooded you and tell us all about it.
And if you know anybody at iHeartRadio, just remember that we have a great podcast. Don't feel
Jen
afraid.
Jen wants an award, everyone.
I would like an award. It can be like on a paper plate. It can be like, tries the hardest.
Oh, our next live Fated Mates episode is in Chicago at Spring Fling. We'll put links to Spring Fling in the show notes as well. You know, if you'd like to join us, that would be great. So stay tuned on that, Chicago.
And of course, we'll both be at KissCon in April, but I think those tickets are sold out.
Those tickets, you cannot pop in on that.
Yeah.
Actually, it's two live episodes because you and I are doing one alone at the beginning of April, and then we're doing episode with the Heaving Bosoms, Wicked Wallflowers. Ooh. It's a triple threat.
It's going to be amazing.
All right, my friends. Go read a book you love.
Oh.
Go reread. I'm giving you permission right now to go reread a book you really, really love.
It's the best.
Yeah. All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi. This is Blondie Text, my Twitter handle, a.k.a. Chris. And really have enjoyed Fated Mates. And in terms of books that blooded me, the first romance books I think I read were like Endless Love in junior high or Forever, Judy Bloom, that kind of thing. I think I also read A Rose in Winter. It was my mom's book. But it really didn't get me into romance until I was in college and I read The Bride by Julie Garwood. I think it was a book that I got from, you know, one of those book of the month club kind of things. I had been reading like Barbara Cartland and Harlequins and stuff like that. And I got The Bride and it was so good. I just loved the alpha hero and that she though was like feisty and she was, you know, grew up adopted daughter of Native Americans, and he was a spy, which I guess I got into, and he was kind of like the spy from the Regency, and I love the Regency period because I was a history major specializing in European history, so I think that got to me. So that really got me into historicals, and I've always loved Julie Garwood ever since then, and even suffered, I like her contemporaries, but and then in terms of, I'm a huge paranormal reader, and I think the first paranormal, I mean, other than like reading The Dragon, the fall books by, oh goodness, now I'm blanking on her name, Anne McCafferty, because I used to read all of Madeline Lingle, but I think the first kind of paranormal that had romance in it was Laurel K. Hamilton, Guilty Pleasures, because it was kind of that alternative world, and she just really did the world building. And I think that's always been a huge thing, the world building. And so I think that's why I love Alona Andrews and Nalini Singh and Patricia Briggs and all of that, because the world building is kind of key. So I guess those are kind of the two big books that really blooded me. So The Bride by Julie Garwood for historicals, and Guilty Pleasures by Laurel K. Hamilton, even though it goes off the rails later. But Laurel K. Hamilton's Guilty Pleasures, first of the Anita Blake series. Thank you, guys, and really, really enjoyed the podcast. And I've had a great time listening to both of you and following you guys on Twitter.